Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for sticking around. We're moving now away from topics where we're discussing how the human body has adapted to different energetic constraints and starting to open up the realm into how our social aspects and behavioral adaptations have developed in order to maximize our energetic returns. So I'm going to be talking a little bit today about fire. Now, all humans living today are adapted to fire to the point that we have to use it. We are obligate fire users. We use it to cook our food, we use it to heat our homes, and every living group today uses fire to some extent or another. This is my research group on the left performing an experiment, but nonetheless, even you today rely on fire on a daily basis. We all know that fire does provide a whole suite of energetic benefits. First and foremost, cooking our food makes it more digestible. It breaks down the parts of the food that are difficult for our bodies to digest and is, in fact, a form of external digestion of those foods. It also gets rid of harmful bacteria, and we've heard today several people talking about food-induced thermogenesis, so that you need to burn energy in order to digest your food and get energy out of it. If you cook that food first, you personally have to burn less energy in order to digest that food. Fire also provides energy savings by heating you so that you don't personally have to heat yourself. So fire is an external source of heat that allows you to save the energy from the food you've eaten so that you don't have to spend it on keeping up your maintaining your core body temperature. Finally, and something that hasn't been discussed much today, is that an important aspect of your overall energy budget is the amount of time per day that you spend that energy. So having the light from a fire allows you to expand that time of day that you can do tasks that you would normally do during daylight hours, things like social networking, things like making or modifying or repairing tools, and so that you can spend your daylight hours going out and actually hunting or collecting those foods. These benefits from fire have been so significant and so strong that several researchers have argued that they, once hominins first figured out how to create and maintain fires, that they very quickly became reliant on it, to the point that as soon as fire became accessible to hominins, they became adapted to it, much like we ourselves are. The earliest archaeological evidence for fire is proposed to be about 2.1 million years ago, a little bit less than that, and that once hominins discovered the usefulness of fire, they very quickly learned how to control it. So not only could they see fire on a landscape and recognize it for what it was, they could go out to that fire and interact with it, they could potentially collect that fire to picking up burning wood, and then eventually learning how to make fire on their own. And the idea is that fire started with a spark, and that spark grew and very quickly consumed and was spread across all hominin groups. And an important part of this story is that the energetic savings that you get from cooking your food, from not having to produce your own heat, that this was such an important savings that it very quickly became something that hominins relied on fundamentally and became adapted to. This is a very compelling story, and there have been books and many papers written on this topic. Today, though, I want to spend a little bit of time asking you to come with me on the other half of that exploration of the use of fire, which is not only focusing on the benefits, but also on the potential costs of fire. Forgive me. We already talked a lot about this, that many of the fundamental shifts in human evolution, things like the increase in brain size, the decrease in gut size, and the reorganization of our bodies, all may have been influenced by the extra energy that cooked food and the heat from fire may have given us. Fire is not free, however, and any exploration of the benefits of fire must come as well with an exploration of the potential costs of that fire. There are many costs associated with fire. One of the most obvious ones that Jean-Jacques mentioned in his introduction this morning was the cost of fuel collection. that among foraging and agricultural groups today, a significant amount of time and energy is spent collecting fuel in areas where the tree cover has been depleted. Women both range further to collect their fuel, they spend more time collecting fuel, and they actually actively try to use less fuel when cooking or doing other household tasks. Outside of the collection of fuel, there is as well the time that you spent maintaining and curating a fire. That this is not free time spending around a campfire the way that we imagine it when we go camping. This is time that is spent doing an activity that cannot be spent doing something else, such as creating tools or going out to your garden plot or hunting down a large deer. There are also social consequences for being the person who has built the fire. You've put the energy in to collecting the fuel, to starting the fire, to maintaining the fire. And suddenly everybody and their brother wants to cook their food on your fire. So this is a cost of energy that you have spent, and other people are benefiting from it. You are benefiting from it too, but maybe with so many people crowded around a fire, you're not able to cook everything that you wanted to on it. So perhaps you are not getting as many benefits out as you had wanted to. And finally, fire comes with many health costs. Things like the inhalation of smoke can cause a lot of problems, and in a lot of developing countries, there is an emphasis on moving away from vegetation-based fuels because these produce quite a lot of harmful, toxic smoke. Another aspect that is underappreciated is the act of cooking a food itself produces these carcinogenic Maillard compounds that some of them taste good and smell good, and some of them cause cancer. So it is an inevitable part of the heating or the browning of foods that creates this potential health hazard. Finally, the costs of fire, as you might imagine, vary depending on the environment in which you live. That if you are in a forest with ample wood resources, perhaps collecting the fuel for fire will take you 5 or 10 minutes. But if you're living in a steppic environment, it's very much more difficult to gather enough wood to create a fire, to cook your food, or to create light or heat. And certainly these costs, as well as the benefits of fire, would have varied through time and through habitat. So we wanted to explore some of these costs and how they might vary through time and across habitat. So no one has put any kind of numerical value or actually directly compared the benefits from fire to the costs of fire. And we wanted to see, are the costs of fire big enough, significant enough, in order to perhaps structure early hominin adoption of fire or their use of fire in different times and different places. So what we did is we looked at the energetic cost. We looked at the largest cost of fire, which we guessed to be the cost of fuel collection, given these studies that showed in modern groups how much time and how much energy was spent collecting fuel. We went to a variety of habitats in the Massif Central area in France. This area was chosen because it has both wooded and less wooded environments, some areas above the tree line. This gave us a variety of habitats, all within the same general environment in which to work. And we then tried to compare those costs of fuel collecting and creating and maintaining a fire with the energetic benefits that could be got by cooking food on that fire. So here a study showing that by consuming cooked foods of the same size and the same caloric value, mice who eat cooked foods gain quite a bit more weight than mice who eat raw foods. And using a variety of different methods to estimate the energetic value from cooking, we then had our benefit costs. So the project went as follows. We had 3 volunteers who went to these habitats. For 30 minutes, they spent collecting fuel in that habitat. They collected fuel with no tools and nothing to carry that wood in, just their hands and arms. After the 30-minute collection period was over, we weighed all of the fuel that had been collected. We then took one volunteer's pile of wood and took it to a place where we were allowed to burn fires. And we burned the entire collected amount of wood and timed how much, how hot that fire got, how long it burned, And during the whole time, all of the volunteers were wearing wrist-worn heart rate and activity monitors. And this was how we measured how much energy they spent during this process. And when we compare among the activities that the three volunteers did, what we compared is them resting for 30 minutes. That's the column furthest to the left. Each volunteer here is indicated in a different color. We looked at them hiking throughout this landscape on several different occasions. We looked at them carrying fuel, that's indicated there, and finally looked at their energy requirements while collecting fuel. And what you'll notice here is that fuel collecting is very energetically costly, much more so than hiking or even carrying fuel in that environment. We also were able to track where the foragers, the fuel gatherers were going while they were collecting the fuel. And print this overlay on maps of the regions. And you can see here the paths of all of the three volunteers in the meadow, in the field, and in the forest. And we were able to compare for these three environments the amount of energy that the individuals burned, the distances that they traveled, the weight of the fuel that they collected, and their total efficiency. And efficiency here was measured as the weight of fuel divided by the distance, by the energy burned, excuse me. And what you'll notice is that the field was had very low efficiency, as might be expected. There were very few trees in this environment, where the forest had very high efficiency. And overall, looking at the map, you can see that our volunteers traveled much less far in the forest environment. They were able to collect much more wood in a small area, as you might expect. But these are the first time anybody's ever actually measured this. So how do the costs of fuel gathering that we measured in this experiment compare to the benefits? Well, simply, we summed the total energy from collecting and carrying the fuel and added that to the energy spent while the individuals sat around the fire for the 3.5 to 4 hours it took for that fire to burn. And in total, we found that those energetic benefits we could then compare to the estimated energetic benefits from cooking. So raw meat versus cooked meat has different energetic values as measured by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And this was one of the three ways that we estimated the energetic benefits of cooking. So if you cook the same volume of meat, you get quite a few more kilojoules of energy out of that cooked meat. So in order to match the energetic costs of collecting the fuel and sitting around the fire, you would need to eat 2 or 3 kilograms of cooked deer meat. Now, a normal portion is about 100 grams. 2 to 3 kilograms is a sizable amount of meat, but possible. I mean, you might imagine that over the course of the day, you could eat 2 to 3 kilograms of meat. However, if you look at plant foods, which I'm particularly interested in, you find that you would need to eat unreasonable amounts of plant foods in order to match the energetic costs of cooking, that the benefits from cooking plant foods are smaller, at least in the three ways that we estimated it, than those from cooking meat. So one example here is a wild root called a burdock root. You would need to eat 4 to 8 kilograms of burdock root, which, let me tell you, you neither want to collect that much burdock root, nor would you want to eat that much burdock root. So the costs are relatively high compared to the benefits in this situation. So in general, what we discovered with this experiment is that collecting fuel is energetically very costly. It is greater than hiking in that same environment, greater even than carrying the fuel in that same environment, possibly because collecting the fuel involves many more activities. That when you're hiking, it's usually straight line locomotion. When you're carrying, it's very similar. You're holding something close to your body mass and you're walking along, often on a path. But when you're collecting fuel, it involves a lot of bending activities, a lot of picking up, a lot of readjusting of the load. So yes, it makes sense that collecting fuel is a costly activity. Hominins may therefore have tried to avoid it. In situations where hominins were not adapted to fire or as reliant on fire as we were, they may have chosen not to spend this energy if the benefits that they got from it were not that high. Now, a caveat here, of course, is that we were working with three individuals who were not regular fuel collectors. So there, that is an important aspect to the study that we're now working with a foraging horticulturalist group in Cameroon, where they regularly collect fuel every day in order to see if we can replicate these results. A second aspect of the study was that the collecting of fuel costs more than the energetic benefits that you can get from food that you cook on that fire, that the amount of food that you would have to cook far outweighs the amount of food that you could physiologically eat or would want to eat during the day. And again, so hominins may have chosen simply not to bother with this whole process of collecting fuel, creating a fire, cooking your food, and then eating it if they had the physiological ability to digest and handle raw food. I do have to add a caveat here as well, that there is a possibility that those costs of collecting the fuel could be shared among a group. So a group could cook a large amount of food, and that cooked food could be shared among a bigger group of people, and so you could amortize the costs of the fire. Interestingly, and not unexpectedly, but again, it's good to have some numbers to show that fuel collection is very costly in open environments, such as in cold period Eurasia. And I think Shannon, our next talk, is going to discuss a little bit more about evidence that suggests that perhaps in certain times in Europe, Neanderthals appeared not to have fire. And it may have been in part because the cost of collecting fuel in that environment outweighed any benefits that you might get from the fire. So this is a suggestion that if hominins were not as adapted to fire as we are, perhaps they chose the times and the places that they used it. So finally, fire does certainly have some benefits, and these are well known and very interesting to explore how cooking of food can change our ability to interact with food or eat a wider variety of food. But I think we do need to do more to explore the potential costs of fire, that you can't only explore the good things without realizing that there are costs as well. I think we've heard there's no free lunch. These costs likely structured the earliest adoptions of fire, when and how and why hominins chose to collect the fire that they found on the landscape or to try to intentionally make the fire. And hominins may have interacted with fire quite early on, even 2 million years ago and so, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they became immediately adapted to it right away, that perhaps in the past the benefits were there, but the costs were as well. So I'd like to thank Jean-Jacques for organizing the symposium. I'd like to thank several others who've helped with the thinking out of this project, my co-authors, and you for your kind attention.